Now let me introduce you my speaker tonight. It's Ernie Epp from New Jersey.
What's up, guys? I'm Ernie. I'm an alcoholic. Am I going to need this mic, or can everyone hear me? I'm just going to move it over.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me out here, man. It's a grateful opportunity here. I love speaking. This is probably the furthest that I've ever traveled to go and speak. So my home group is the Central Fact in New Jersey. It's about an hour and a half from here. So if you're ever in the middle of Medford, New Jersey, stop in. It's Wednesday night. It's Big Book Breakdown. It's a good meeting. So I get an hour to talk your ears off. I think I can do that. Just going to tell you how it was a little bit. I like to talk a lot about the solution. Real quick, before I get going, I just want to put this out there that I'm going to be sharing my experience and my experience only. So if you can't relate to me, that's okay. Just try not to compare, and you're going to hear a lot of God. So I like to say that up front just to clear the area real quick, because there is a lot of God in my story. And again, it's my story, no one else's. So I grew up in a loving family. I was brought up Catholic, so I already knew everything about God. At least what I thought. My father's an alcoholic. My brother's an alcoholic. So my mother she hated it. You know, she hated the lifestyle. She hated like when he would go to the pub or everything that followed alcoholism. You know, I remember as a young kid, my dad in and out of the rooms, just seeing the lifestyle that he was living already, it was attractive to me, you know, like that, just like always on the move, never know what the next plan's going to be. And it was always interesting to me. I always was like, man, I want to do that, you know? It didn't work out well as I got older, but I like to share this story when I was a kid. And from doing the work and, you know, taking a look back, you know, we see, like, you know, when do you really remember alcoholism, like, or, you know, when was the first time you noticed something different? I don't know if this was something different from doing the work, I was able to see some tendencies that were a little off. And I like to share this story, but, you know, I remember, you know, Santa Claus was coming to town, and my brother had asked for something, and I had asked for something, and I got exactly what I asked for. Santa Claus delivered that gift. And I look at my brother, and I see his gift, and I just said to myself, man, I should ask for that. You know, I just, even though I got what I wanted, the satisfaction wasn't there. You know, it just wasn't there. And that kind of followed me my whole life. You know, even I got the job, I got the girl, I got the money. I always was never satisfied. I was always looking for the next opportunity that was going to, what I thought, make me better. And that was never the case. It always put me in a deeper rut, just chasing this, you know, invisible thing that I thought was going to fix me or help me. So, like I said, my older brother and my father, both alcoholics and drug addicts. So I'm going to keep it in the bottle the best I can. So growing up watching them drink heavily, again, you know, I was drawn to it. I didn't think it was a problem. I didn't think it was an issue. I didn't think that my mother and father getting a divorce was a problem. I thought that was normal. You know, I thought my brother not being able to hold a job and always getting into fights was normal. You know, so again, like, this is what I want to do. I didn't know any better. You know, my mother would tell me all the time, I don't want you to be like them, but that, you know, I was on my own way. I was on my own way. My drinking career didn't really take off until I was about 14, 15 years old. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I stood here and said that every time that I drank was bad, because that's not true. That's not the case. I had successful nights, very few. But I had fun, you know. In high school, it was all right, until it wasn't. I was an athlete in high school. I bowled. I was a hell of a bowler. But Yeah, I played baseball and I did bowl. That was good. But yeah, any chance of me having a career in sports was quickly diminished from my alcohol abuse. I went to a Catholic high school. You know, I have 164 kids. I graduated 161st. So I wasn't last. Got a great education too. But, you know, I probably sophomore year is when it started to get a little darker for me. I was starting to, dip and dab into some heavier alcohol. And, you know, my older brother was a big influence in me. I say that because that's what it was. You know, that's what he said. Like, here, try this. Drink this type of alcohol or do this alcohol. It'll change your life. And it did. And I chased it. And, it wasn't good. And I remember sophomore year, it was like, I was still able to maintain it, but I was like to the point where now I was like waking up with like, you know, those hangovers and everything else. And I was like, oh, why am I sick? Why don't I feel good? And I was able to maintain it for a little bit until I wasn't. But I, you know, I had heard things from my brother, from them in and out of the room, like, you know, you keep doing these things, people are going to start to die. You're going to start to notice things. People don't make, you know, they don't live through this stuff. Like, okay, whatever. And I hadn't lost anybody due to like, hardcore drinking yet. And then I remember the first time, what was it? It was February 10th. I had a great, real good friend of mine in high school, and I get to school that day, and I, you know, the priest comes by and the nun comes by, and all the teachers are like, yeah, such and such passed away. You know, he overdosed. That was the first time in my life that I had ever experienced a real big, you know, a big loss like that, a big friend. I was like, wow, all right, maybe this is real, you know, but still in the back of my head, I was like, maybe he just, you know, had a bad bottle or something. Maybe just like, bad booze. Something, you know, on those lines. It was just, I couldn't comprehend that, like, what the real problem was. So that was like a big wake up call. And I, you know, I remember crying all day. And I remember driving home that day. And my father called me on the phone. I also tend to cry. So just putting that out there too. My father calls me on the way home from school, and he says, hey, buddy, I heard about your friend. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm here for you. If you need anything, let me know. I was like, yeah, all right. And I hung up. And that was the last conversation I had with my father. He passed away that night from this disease. You know, and still, it wasn't like, oh, I, you know, this is a problem. It was just, for me at the time in my life, was fuel to just keep drinking and to keep doing what I thought I knew best. You know, I wasn't comfortable with who I was. You know, I tried to fit in. You know, we talk about the chameleon effect, right? I can be whoever you want me to be. That's really not an issue, at all. And I just, you know, alcohol did that for me. You know, it made me comfortable. It made me do things that I wouldn't do sober then. And I just thought that, like, all right, I can drink this away. This pain will eventually go away. And it didn't, but I thought, I did the geographic change right before high school ended. I was like, you know what? Like, the mourning of my father was so much, and my drinking was getting to the point where my mother didn't really want me around, and, you know, I wasn't like willing to do any treatment or anything like that. And I wasn't hiding it at all anymore. It was very open with it. So I ended up joining the Army. Cause that's going to fix my problem. That's what's going to help me. So, and it didn't, it didn't, it, I don't want to say it made me worse. I don't want, not, you know, I made myself worse, but it was, you know, I loved it. I joined the military, got to do some honorable things when I was in there. By the grace of God, I didn't get a dishonorable discharge. I don't know how that's possible, but God was looking out for me. But, you know, throughout, and, you know, the Army put me in about 10 different ASAP programs, which is basically, it's their treatment programs, but the Army calls them ASAP. It's Army Substance Abuse Programs. And, I did that, and, you know, they never AA, you know, pushed, never, nothing, no recovery at all. It was basically sit you down in a chair and they look at you and say, you're a soldier, you're stronger than this. Stop effing drinking. So I can't. I don't know how. Show me how and I will stop. And I would stop for a couple of days, maybe a week, a month, you know, and then now I got to make up for that month that I didn't drink, and then further down the hole I go. Just a painful, painful, painful time. Couple mobilizations when I was in the Army. So, and I still, you know, you would think with being, you know, out of country or something like that, you wouldn't go searching or seeking for a bottle, and that was the only thing that I tried to do. You know, putting other people's lives in jeopardy it's scary, you know? But I remember coming home sick as a dog, not knowing which way was up, not knowing what I was going to do with my career, not knowing what I was going to do with my life. The only thing that I wanted to do was party, like I still thought I could. And I that's all I wanted to do. I had no interest in doing anything else. The only interest I had was being okay making $100 a week and hustling on the side to have other stuff that I wanted. And I thought I was doing a great job. I thought that this was my life. It wasn't. So a couple years of pure hell. A lot of sickness, a lot of pain, a lot of torture. I don't want to get deep into that. There's no point in me standing up here telling you how dark and scary it was, because we've all been there, you know. I went and saw my brother. He lived in Boston at the time. He was living in Boston, and you know, he was a guy that I looked up to, because he was a guy who could actively drink and maintain a job, make great money, and not lose anything. You know, he was able to do, like, a functioning alcoholic. I went to see him, and the following weekend he ended up passing away from the disease too. So, you know, again, it was just more fuel for me to just keep adding on to this fire that's, you know, erase all this pain from me. And so finally, you know, I'm down the way in Kensington drinking heavily, and I had it's like the first time in my life where I was like, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm going to go to treatment. And where my addiction takes me, it takes me to psychosis, and, you know, looking everywhere but straight and painful stuff. And I remember I go run into my stepmom, and I'm saying to her, I'm ready to go to treatment. You know, this is and it's the first time that I was willing to want to do anything. I was tired of being beat up. I had nothing. I just was beat up. And I remember I was in the hospital. I was in a psychiatric ward at the time, but I was in the psych part of the hospital, and they said, before I could even like change my mind to say no, they had already had a plane ticket ready for me to go to Florida and all this stuff. And on I went. I went to Florida, and I went down to Delray Beach, and man, that was a beautiful place. It was beautiful. I it was the first time AA was implemented in my life. I don't know if anyone's ever did Delray Shuffle or the Florida Shuffle or whatnot, but if you plug in with the right people when you're down there, you will get sober, and you can stay sober too. I plugged in and then unplugged, but you know, when I went down there, I got to meet a lot of people, and I got, you know, I did the deal for a little bit, you know, and I got a taste of AA, and I got a taste of what God could do for me, but I was oblivious to what else he could do for me. I got what I wanted, and that was it. And I was like, okay, Ernie's good. I'll just keep it moving here. Let me go back home. You know, don't get a girlfriend. Let me get a girlfriend. Got the girlfriend, and I was drinking within 3 days. But, you know, with all that being said, someone, you know, and we hear it all the time in these rooms. Someone said to me, and it stuck with me down there. It was like, you know, a head full of AA don't mix with a belly full of beer. So like every time that I decided that I was going to go back out after that was painful. And I always remembered that because, you know, doing 1, 2, and 3 and then going back out sucks. And it sucks. It's just, it's not fun. It's painful. But so I remember coming home after, I think I was down there for about 9 months or so. And I came back home and yeah, I thought I was going to marry this girl. You know, this is going to be my future wife. You know, going to have plenty of children, buy a house. None of that came true. None of that happened. She left shortly after we got back to Jersey, probably within, not shortly after. It was just a toxic relationship. She didn't understand what I was capable of, essentially. And to be, if I'm being honest with everybody in here, I didn't know I was capable of half the shit that I would, stuff that I was doing. I'm going to do my best to not curse. Yeah, it just, you know, my disease progressively got worse. It started out bad and then it got really, really dark. Painful. And I was so stuck on the fact I had mentioned in the beginning that like I had knew everything about God already, you know, because I went to a Catholic school. You can't tell me anything. I know everything there is to know about God. Man, was I wrong. So I always struggled with that. You know, I always struggled trying to have a new experience with God. She leaves and I just ran around. I was trying to do things that I thought was going to make me better. I would, you know, in and out of like a couple week relationships here and there, getting different jobs. If a job paid me 7 1/4 and the other job was going to pay me $7.26, I was taking that one because I thought that the extra penny was going to change my life. You know, I must have had 20 different jobs. Yeah, maybe more. Safe to say I couldn't hold one, you know? I just was constantly running around trying to fix my own problem, and that wasn't the case. And I was too stubborn to listen. You know, that willingness to want to go to Florida was there. And then when I came home, it was so hard to come back because I was so deep involved. By the grace of God, I got an opportunity to get into the union. And now, you know, it's like I have this career ahead of me, right? And now drinking is like, it's like you're frowned upon. You get looked frowned upon if you don't drink. You know, it's like that's the thing to do. You go out with the men after work and go out and party, and that's what you do. So that's what I did. That's what I tried to do. And I was like, I've made it. I finally have found the job where they encourage me to want to drink on the job, go out with them after work, and show up the next day and hair the dog. I thought like, you know, that moment, like I've arrived. Well, I arrived at work. That was, I got laid off from every contractor that ever employed me. I didn't get thrown out, but you know, the union will see past through that quick. You're like, oh, well, look, we like to drink too, pal, but you got to show up to work. So, and when you show up to work, you got to work. You can't hide in the porta potty for an hour and a half. So yeah, and you know, and like I said, I've had bits and pieces of sobriety, of my own sobriety, right, of Ernie's sobriety. I'll sit on the couch for a couple weeks and I'll get better. And then I'll go back to work, or I'll go calling somebody crying, yo, you guys hiring, you busy? Yeah, you all right? Are you sober? Yeah, I'm good. How long are you going to stay sober this time? Believe me, I'm done. First opportunity I get is usually the first one that'll take me right out. But towards the end, before God intervened in my life, and He's been intervening this entire time. I was just too, you know, oblivious to listen and hear it and see it. I was on a real bad tear. I was running really hard. I was in a relationship, with a woman who had five kids because I wanted to be a family man. I wanted children. So my perfect, beautiful alcoholic idea was, let me find a woman who has multiple kids, and that'll fix me, you know? And I got the house. I thought I had the woman. I had the dog, you know what I mean? No picket fence though. It was a white vinyl fence. But, I had everything that I had wanted. You know, I had the car, I had everything, and I was still unhappy. I was still sick. I was still, you know, restless, irritable, discontent, right? Everything that we hear and we know is what exactly I was still doing and feeling. I had no idea. And she was a bartender, encouraged me to drink often. It got real dark. And my addiction takes me to places where I don't know if anyone is familiar with the term of Baker acted, but is anyone familiar with that? Okay, yeah, I know you are. That's what happens to me. In New Jersey, they don't really call it that, but it's essentially what it is. That's what happens to me every time. And then I come to, what happened? Okay, say no more. Keep it moving. It was a little different for me this time when I woke up and came to and nobody was there. And I was like, no one cares anymore. Poor me. Let me, more fuel. So it got real dark really quick, and we were downtown in Philly and, you know, building a building. And, I had a great idea that I was just, you know, suicide was the only thing left for me. You know what I mean? Cause at the point I felt so useless. I couldn't help anybody. Nobody wanted me around. I wasn't a help to nobody. You know what I mean? The relationship with my mother was basically nil. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to stop doing what I was doing. Even though I wanted to. I wanted to stop 1,000 times. And 1,000 times before that. And I couldn't. And I couldn't get my ass back to AA because I was too stubborn and too embarrassed. I couldn't keep my head high. I couldn't tell anybody at work because I was scared to lose my job, right? So the only thing that I could only think that would be better for the world, right? Because, like, you know, maybe I'm not so selfish. Let me think about other people and just kill myself. Yeah, let me tell you, that's being real unselfish there, I guess. Where's your motives? So that was my idea. My idea was to go to the biggest building in the city, that we were working on and jump off of it. And God intervened. God intervened. And he said, nope, not today. You're not doing that today. And I had a buddy of mine looked at me and he said, Ernie, you're gray. Come on down here. I'm going to take you to a meeting. We're going to get you cleaned up. You're going to be okay. Something happened where I said, okay, say no more. Let's do it. So I remember I was in psychosis for about 2 weeks. And I remember, like, kind of like defogging a little bit. And I had a sponsor and I was working the steps and I was like, wow, are you sure I'm doing all this? They're like, yeah, I guess you just finally woke up. Yeah, but I say that because, like, God was working. God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. God spoke through me to another man and said, I need a sponsor at the time. And I did. I say this too, like, I didn't come in to AA again with willingness like this. I didn't have any willingness. My willingness was like this. But as I continued to do the work and I continued to grow a relationship with my God, my willingness grew to want to stay. And that's a beautiful thing for me, because coming back was so hard. But once I got plugged back in and once I got a taste of what God could do, I'm going to continue to seek, right? And that's how it went for me. And that's how it was in the beginning. It was, you know, I don't have the experience of having that white light going off, right? Like I, Once that fog wore off, I was already into it. I was ready to rock and roll. What more can I do? I wanted to jump into it. And I remember, you know, like, I walked around, you know, writing my four step and doing my fifth step. And my sponsor rode me like a pony. He said, dude, you need to get this done, unless you're going to die. All right. So I did it, and I half-assed it. Did a fifth step with him. No white light. Nothing happened. You know what I mean? I actually drove around the block like 10 times before I actually sat and did the fifth step. And it's just like, I wasn't in pain still, but I was like curious on like why I was still feeling like crap and all these other things. So I reached out to a buddy of mine that I met when I was down in Florida. And, you know, this man was there for me when I first met him in Florida and was there for me when I was running, and he was there for me today. And, you know, he gave me the, he gave me the love from a distance for a little bit, you know, checking in. Yeah, you're all right. Just making sure you're alive type of deal. But it took a lot for me to, I'm going to cry. It took a lot for me to want to reach back out to him because I was embarrassed for the things that I did and the shame that I felt. But I did, and he welcomed me back in with open arms. And maybe a month after, like, rekindling the friendship, or 2 months, I don't know how long it was, I asked him to be my sponsor. Just because I could see his lifestyle the way it was. You know, I didn't get thrown out of the union, God willing. So I had a job, you know what I mean? But I didn't want that anymore. I wanted to be happy and free. And I saw this man when he first got sober to where he was today. And it's like, I want that. That's what I want. All the materialistic bullshit, I don't need. I have a car. I got a house to live in. I don't need anything else, but I just want the peace. I don't want to kill myself. Because I was 3 months sober, still contemplating wanting to jump off a bridge. And I didn't want to live like that. And I asked this man to be my sponsor, and that man put my hand in God's hand the day I asked him to be my sponsor, and my life was forever changed. He's sitting in here tonight. But, you know, he didn't settle for my bullshit. That's what I needed. You know, he said, you want to do this work, we're going to do this work. There's no timeline. There's no timeline in this book. I'm going to take you through this work as fast as I can. Because you need to get free. And we went through the work, and he taught me what I suffered from, and he showed me what the real problem was, and he showed me what the solution was, and he showed me on how to have a relationship with my God. And that changed my life. That changed my life. Because I had no idea up until then. I had no idea. And, man, I latched on. I got, like, so, like, I was rejuvenated. I just, like, all I wanted to do was, like, hey, yeah, that's what I wanted. That's everything. All I wanted to do was help another man. Constantly write inventory. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to constantly do what I could. You know, he rode me, made me have commitments, made me get comfortable being uncomfortable, made me do things that I thought I would never do. You know, like I say this, I was talking to a sponsee brother on the way here. I never thought the day would come where somebody would ask me to dress up in a suit and stand up at a podium and tell my life story and not judge me. I never thought that day would happen, or at least not like, oh man, this dude's a fucking mess. Yeah. That's what I, and I, you know, it's full of gratitude, you know? That man gave me direction on had to make an amends to my father. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't need to make an amends to my father. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's, I say this, you know, I say this a lot, like, I might cry or, you know, I tear up a lot and I get emotional. And I say that because I'm proud of it. Because up until I could cry, I didn't. I didn't think I showed any emotion, but whatever emotion someone else wanted me to show. You know, that's what I did. You want me to be mad or angry? God, hold on, watch how mad I can be. You know what I mean? You want me to be happy? Watch how happy I can pretend to look. I made a gravesite amends to my father, and my sponsor says that's when the floodgates opened, because that's when I started to cry. And I didn't realize this at the time because, you know, still in my alcoholic mind, I'm thinking to myself, this amends didn't do nothing for me. This didn't do anything, you know? But I'm glad I did it, check, you know? Little did I know, looking back, like, I cried for like 2.5 hours straight when I was making that amends. I didn't cry for, I don't know, 15 years before that. Maybe, you know? You know, and then I made amends to my sister right after I made that gravesite amends to my father. I didn't want to do that. That wasn't even planned. But I remember my sponsor's ear saying to me, call me before you make an amends and call me when you're done. All right. So like I'm leaving the cemetery, and first of all, I didn't even know how to get to the funeral or the cemetery. I had to call my mother, and she had to drive me basically to the gravestone. Because I never was there. And I make the amends, and then I'm like, something came over me. God, why don't you go make an amends to your sister right now? Yeah, I'm going to go make an amends to my sister. Hey, you know, what do you think about that? He's like, go for it. Let's rehearse it. And I went and made an amends to my sister. And very freeing stuff. Amends are beautiful. Amends are very freeing. You know, what I do today on a daily basis is, I mean, I take commitments when they're asked. You know, that so I was supposed to come out, I think it was last Monday, but something got a little, I think I was too late responding to the text message. And then I was supposed to come out in March, and then she asked me to come tonight. And I said, yeah, no problem, sure. I know it was an hour and a half, but I still would have came. But what I do today, you know, I take men through the book. I'm a sponsor when I can be. You know, I'm always looking to do the next thing with another man. And I just do, what I do is I try to have a new experience with everything, because I tried to live off of old experiences in the past, and it hasn't done anything good for me. You know, it kept me sober for a little bit, and it didn't take me out, but it got me real stagnant. It got me real stale. You know, it got me feeling every bedevilment that you could possibly feel. You know? You know, as soon as I start putting my power other than God, my life gets a little interesting. It's a little goofy. You know, it's not bad, but it gets interesting. What's going on here? Why, you know, it says in our book, lack of power, that was our dilemma. If I start putting power in everything else, I'm in trouble. And I can, and I will sober. I may not be doing that right now, but I may in the future. I have in the past. You know, I'll put it into women. I'll put it into money, cars, job, everything. You know, because this disease doesn't go away. This is always here. It's always there. And it knows when to kick in, when it wants to kick in. It's waiting. Oh, this is the perfect time for me to kick in for Ernie. And it does, and it will. You know, but the difference of it happening now compared to when it was before is that, You know, we have a tool, a spiritual tool kit. You know, I love that. I love saying that. Spiritual. I would never, in my right mind, think that I would be talking in front of people saying that I have a spiritual toolkit that saved my life. I would never imagine that. It almost sounds like far fetched when you say it out loud, but it's the truth, and it's real. And I'm very passionate about this program, and when I mean to say that God is 100% in my life, everyone around me will know if I'm giving power to something else except God. because, and that's why I stay so close to the people that I'm close with now, because it holds me accountable for when I can't, when I can't keep myself accountable. When I start isolating and causing chaos in my life, my friends, my sponsor, my girlfriend, my family, they'll start looking at me and saying, what's going on here? You all right? You know, my sponsor says it best, and I can hear it saying now. He's like, you want to know how I'm really doing? Knock on my front door. Go look inside my car, and you'll really know how I'm doing. And that's the truth. Once I start, I don't ever steer away from AA, but I'll start getting complacent with not, you know, being grateful for God in my life. And, you know, maybe I didn't hit my knees that morning. Maybe I didn't hit my knees that night. Maybe I didn't hit my knees for a week. You know, maybe I'm just taking God, you know, for granted at this point, but I still am aware that he's there, you know? That's what'll happen for me. And I'll cause chaos in my own life. And once that pain gets great enough, then I'll take action on it. You know, it's finding that equal balance that helps. And usually that's sponsoring other men. Diving right into the work with another man, will pull me right out of that funk. And I've had the honor to sponsor men, and I have the honor of being a grand sponsor today, you know. Building relationships with other people, let alone God, is a gift. That's a blessing. You know, basically relearning how to live life on God's terms is a blessing. I didn't think the way my life was going, I didn't think that the life that I have today was achievable, you know. And we hear the saying all the time that, you know, it's a life beyond our wildest dreams. Every dream that I had of came true. Plus, every dream that I thought I could have had has come true. All due to God. And all due to doing this work and taking a look at what the real problem is, learning what I really suffer from, and teaching another man what he really suffers from and getting him through. And that's what keeps me moving, you know? Watching the light bulb go off for another alcoholic and watching that freedom coming. Oh, I'll cry right now. Just watching the freedom coming to another man's eyes is the most rewarding thing. That's what it is for me. That's what does it. And I've seen it on multiple occasions. And, oh, man. It's just a beautiful thing. I'm always in service when asked. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm not saying I'm going to drop, you know, if I'm in the middle of a very important thing, I'm not going to just drop it. But if I'm sitting on the couch eating Cheetos and someone calls me and asks me to speak, I'm going to go and speak. I'm not going to bounce around and look for every option on why I can't go. Yeah, I mean, life is great today. Life is great. I have zero complaints on anything. I don't. My sponsor tells me that. He says, a bad day was 9/11. Can't have a bad day in AA. And I've stolen that from him, and I've said it 1,000 different times, and he knows it. And that's truly how I feel to this day. I really cannot have a bad day with AA, in AA, especially when God is surrounded with me. I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's it. That's all God wants to say. That's all I got. Thanks.